From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Money is always looking for a new way to be traded. Wampum, shells, gold coins, cash. Next up, mobile money. Money on your smartphone. Wave it at the checkout line and walk on by. It's already huge in East Asia, Europe. It's about to go big in the U.S. Your smartphone as your digital wallet. Swipe it, scan it, tap it to pay, or just keep it in your pocket as you walk through the shopping mall. Cash is still with us, but its days may be numbered. This hour on Point, the mobile payment revolution. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Michael Copeland, senior editor at Wired magazine. He covers the intersection of business and technology. Michael Copeland, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's going on with mobile payment? How's it work? How widespread?
Well, it's widespread is not the word I would use. It's out there. It's growing. But the problem is everyone's got their own version of mobile payments. And so if you have one thing in your on your phone, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can use your phone everywhere.
So I've seen it going on. You go to Starbucks, they've got their version now. And yes, it's a battlefield. We'll talk about who may win out here, what standards are emerging. But just describe for us, maybe it's different depending on who you use or what system you use. But how does it work for people who just haven't done it at all, Michael?
Well, let's use the Starbucks example, and that's one mode. And Starbucks it's actually a very popular mobile payments option. And what they've done is essentially taken your Starbucks card, that thing that you load up with money so you can buy coffee and scones and whatever you want. And they've put that sort of built that into an app. So this app replaces your Starbucks card. The app is connected to your credit card, so you can load it up with money. You walk into a Starbucks, you have the app fired up, and you order whatever you want, and the app generates a barcode, those little, you know, black and white lines that you see on every item that you buy. And you scan that barcode and you pay for your Starbucks items that way when you walk up to the end of the line. So it's instead of pulling that gift card out of your pocket, you pull your phone out of your pocket and you scan it. Is it slightly more convenient? I guess so. So that's the Starbucks model, and that's an app that sits on your phone.
But this is not the vision of this coming right out of your bank account, savings or checking or something, the sort of virtual debit card?
No, it's not. And it's really a replacement for that piece of plastic that you have in your pocket that you've loaded up or somebody gave you. And so it's sort of an intermediate step toward that sort of really cashless mobile transaction that plucks the money straight out of your bank account.
What's the full step look like and who's doing it?
Well, the full step, I don't think, at least in the United States, the full step really isn't quite there yet. I mean, there's some intermediate step where something has to be connected to your credit card. I mean, you could argue that Square, which is a San Francisco-based company, and they're best known for that little fob, that Square fob that's a card reader. They also have a service where I download an application onto my phone and it knows based on my GPS coordinates that I am coming near a Square-enabled coffee shop, let's say.
Okay, or any other kind of shop for that matter.
Yeah. Or any other kind of shop, but there's tens of thousands out there, not, you know, hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. So your selection isn't huge. And since it knows I'm nearby this shop, you know, my tab sort of shows up, and let's say I'm walking in and I'm going to go buy some socks, and I've picked out my socks, and you know I don't even need to take my phone out of my pocket because it's got an account connected again to my credit card or to my bank account, I guess, in theory, and I just at the end of the purchase I have my socks on the counter. The person who's cashing me out looks at on their screen and sees a picture of me to verify that it is me and says, you know, thank you, Michael, for coming in and buying your socks. And, you know, we'll put this on your tab. And I'm like, yes, thanks. And I walk out with my socks.
The security piece here is simply them looking at a photo on my phone and looking at me to make sure they match.
That's part of it. Yeah. I mean, they need to know that you're nearby, and turns out you are because your phone knows that you're nearby, so they get alerted as I'm coming into the store, or even I could be a block away if I want to.
But how do they know it's not somebody else with my phone buying those socks for their feet, not mine?
Yeah, they don't look at your feet.
Yeah.
That's where the photo comes in. So when you come up to the counter to make that purchase, they look at at your photo and say, oh, yes, this is Michael. And in fact, he is buying socks and he's okaying the purchase as we stand here. And that's it. So it's proximity. It's also, you know, this factor of me being right in front of you and saying, yes, you know, that's my purchase.
You go to Japan or Korea or lots of places in Europe, you're going to see tons of this. There's a lot less in the U.S., but you and many others say we're about to have a major shift toward this mobile payment world. What's driving that?
Well, I think, as always, technology gets ahead of behavior. And behavior sort of was on the mobile side, was farther ahead in Europe and Asia. So it's not surprising that they're ahead of us in this mobile payments game. But if you think about the internet and what we're comfortable doing on the internet now, banking, you know, shopping, making reservations, you know, finding where we are, getting maps, the internet of our laptops and our desktops has moved onto our phones. And so I think the behavior that we're comfortable with on our laptops, we're also very comfortable now on our smartphones. And the main difference is now these devices go with us everywhere and know where we are. So it adds a whole nother layer of location and sort of personal proximity that our laptops couldn't. But again, I think that important piece of behavior, we're now comfortable doing all sorts of things via the internet. Now that the internet lives on our phones, we're far more comfortable with that too. And that will extend itself to mobile payments.
Who's driving this, Michael? I mean, is it, 20-year-olds who find cash just an artifact from ancient history, don't want to be bothered with it? Is it retailers? What's their interest in it? Is it banks who somehow see a new set of fees here? Who's driving? Who's pushing?
Well, it's a number of different players. And so, yes, it's banks. I mean, if you think about it, there hasn't been a huge kind of change in the way we pay for things since the credit card. You know, you could argue the debit card is slightly different, but the credit card came around in the 50s. And so you went through this litany of how cash wants to or money wants to change. And I think this is the next phase of that change. But banks are behind it. There's huge technology companies. Well, banks because transaction fee. If the more convenient that you make it for me to buy things, the more opportunity there is for them to get that slight cut of a transaction, small percentages.
Will it be the same kind of percentage they've charged on credit cards? Rather substantial?
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, Square has come into this game, you know, as a payments processor, essentially, and they've driven the percentage down dramatically. What it would cost for me, it's essentially, you know, I can walk into the Square's office, pick up a little card reader for free, and you know, apply it to them and be a merchant that can accept credit cards within, you know, virtually minutes.
But that's on the other side of the aisle. I mean, that's important too, but merchants have complained for a long time about those several percentage points that the credit card companies take. What about as a user, you know, in this mobile payment world, am I going to be paying something extra? I don't know, a percent, 2, 3, 4, or somebody, or what kind of cut is being taken?
That remains to be worked out. I mean, right now, if I'm a user, I'm buying something, I'm not paying, you know, Square or PayPal or Starbucks anything for the privilege. The folks who are paying are on the other side, on the merchant side. But again, that percentage is going to be smaller than it is, you know, in the world that exists today.
That is smaller than credit card cuts.
Exactly. And then if I'm a merchant and I want to apply for a credit card reading machine or one of these new near field communication machines, which we'll get to, that the cost of setting myself up into this cashless, you know, mode is far less. And so I think the percentages we'll see driven down a little bit on the merchant side. For us as the users, there are competing standards, and you could imagine a scenario not unlike your ATM where, you know, if it's not your bank or if this is not the mobile payment system that I have on my phone, I might be given the privilege of using it, but that might cost me a little, you know, extra service fee. I think probably the mobile payments people will want to shy away from that because they want us to adopt mobile payments.
Right.
Yeah. And so dinging us with fees.
We'll look at so many angles on this, but it's still a battlefield out there. People looking to sort of own this or own a piece of this. But, I mean, the expectations are now huge. 2/3 of technology experts surveyed this spring. This was a Pew Center survey. said they expected mobile payments to eclipse cash and credit cards by 2020, which is coming up lickety-split here. That means if they're at all right, we're on the verge of a big shift here, Michael.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's driven by that thing in your pocket. I mean, that mobile computer that you have with you everywhere. And what's interesting is it's not just this sort of transaction. You know, your phone, services like Foursquare, which is this location-based service that kind of knows where you've been and what you like. You know, you can imagine just sort of walking through your neighborhood or through your near work through the commercial district and, you know, it knows, your phone knows, and these services know what you've bought in the past, where you like to eat lunch. You know, maybe that this time of month you like to buy. Yeah. And so they'll send you offers. They'll send you like, look, you've eaten at these five taco places. There's a new one. Go to this one. Right. And you're just walking past it right now.
It's so, like talking cash. Yeah. And what? Cash may just be for, I don't know, who needs it to be cash and untrackable? Let's think about who that might be.
Right.
We've got a lot to look at here. Michael Copeland with Wired Magazine. Please stand by in San Francisco. We're talking about the smartphone as your new wallet, mobile payment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the smartphone as your new wallet, mobile payment, and maybe the end of cash. We'll speak in just a moment with a retailer who's well down this path already and with a big banker who's moving into this arena. Michael, we've got interesting feedback already online. Greg says, you know, a lot of businesses prefer cash. He said these tech people need to spend more time in less trendy parts of the country than yours. But here's another. Richard says, I've been using, you know, a Square card reader on my phone, my iPad. Incredible. He says, you know, just one example, Apple's retail store app. You, with that app on your iPhone, you walk into an Apple store. He says, take a product off the shelf, scan it with your own iPhone, and walk out. And that's it. You've paid. You're gone. That couldn't be easier. Talk about zipless.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Apple, and plenty of folks obviously love the iPhone. What Apple hasn't sort of committed to, though, is, you know, its version of mobile payments. You know, Google has Google Wallet, and it uses certain technology, but Apple's been a little bit coy and sort of sitting on the sidelines, and everyone's waiting to see what Apple really wants to do in this arena.
So what does the battlefield look like? Who are the big players here?
Well, so we mentioned the banks. Some of the other big players, though, you've got your wireless carrier. So Sprint, for example, has teamed up with Google, and Google has something called Google Wallet, and it's got what it uses is a chip. It's called a near field communication chip that's built into, at this point, it's only for phones on Sprint, but you have this chip and you have to have the chip, the right carrier, Sprint, and then you have to have one of these chip readers in a store, and there's, you know, stores that have signed up to be a part of Google Wallet. And what you do is you bump your phone onto this reader. The phone then activates a PIN number, and you have to fill in your PIN number to sort of, you know, to make sure that, you know, it's not somebody else just bumping your phone into the reader and buying things. So you have this protection, and then, you know, you authorize the purchase and you walk out. So that's Google Wallet, runs on Sprint. You know, there's other phone companies, wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile have teamed up to do a version of Google Wallet that they haven't named yet. And what they've called it, ISIS, so far. And, you know, they haven't even launched it into the marketplace yet. But they're gearing up to do their own sort of network of near-field communication, you know, phone bumping payment processing. So you have wireless carriers, you have companies like Google. We expect Apple to play a more active role in this, and certainly Microsoft can't be far behind. So you have technology companies, companies like MasterCard and Visa, so who are in the credit card processing business, Verifone, which is another huge payments processing company, and point of sale systems manufacturer. So they're in this business too. You even have companies like Western Union, who they need to move into the mobile world and fast. And while theirs is moving money from one person to another, they need to be in this world as well.
Michael, let's talk with a retailer in your backyard there. Trendy backyard. Nevertheless, this, everybody says it's where things are going. Hillary Chernis is with us from San Francisco. She's owner of Devil's Teeth Baking Company in San Francisco. Hillary, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So what percentage of your customers are now paying with the mobile payment, you know, some kind of digital wallet?
Well, it's pretty low for us right now. It's easy for us to use, but you have to convince our customers to sign up for the app. And San Francisco is trendy right now, but our shop is near the beach, and it's not quite as trendy as everywhere else. And you have to take that extra step and download the app. And
which app are you promoting or seeing most, Hillary?
We use Square, which is fantastic. We think Square is excellent. It's been entirely useful and helpful and easy. But to download the Square, Pay with Square, it's called, you just have to download an app. And a lot of people aren't willing to take the time to do that. We do have regulars that come in. I'd say it's about 5% for us.
As a retailer, if this is the brave new world, how does it look to you? Is this better than where we've been to you as a retailer? Why? Or is it worse? Why?
It's a little bit faster transactionally. If someone doesn't have to have cash, if I don't have to swipe a credit card, it takes fewer seconds for the payment to happen. But other than that, it's very easy to use, and it's much the same. I push, you know, a payment key, and it gives me the option of cash, charge, or whoever's picture is on Pay with Square shows up.
What costs you less? Is this cheaper for you than processing a credit card?
It's the same right now.
It's the same. And you're near the beach. Now, people don't mind swimming maybe with a couple of bills in their pocket that could get wet but dry up. But smartphones, no thanks.
Right. You know, it's people who walk around, as most people do with their smartphone, it's easy. They walk in, I know they're there, and we can charge them. But it's been funny. In the beginning, when we just opened, we've only been open for a year, Devil's Teeth has, and we had time to kind of push the, at the time it was called Card Case, now it's called Pay with Square, and we had a lot more regular signing up for it, but we've been busier and busier, and we don't have time to sell people on the idea.
Are you, yeah. Are you using, Hillary, or imagining you will use this kind of reach out to touch that consumer? If they buy with you digitally, sooner or later, you're going to be able to talk to them and say, hey, yummy scones just out of the oven. You might even see that they're within a block of your shop because of the GPS on their phone. Are you daydreaming about how you'll use that or doing it already?
No. It sounds like you're describing kind of a directed Twitter to our Card Case customers, which is a fun idea, but I don't know that we are not that hip or techie out here. And
hey, Michael Copeland, isn't that where people are talking about this going? The it'll be reaching out from the retailer to the consumer.
Oh yeah, I think again I'll mention a company Foursquare that is all about sort of location based activities and services. And again, if your phone knows where you are and knows what you like. Increasingly, there's going to be this two-way sort of communication. You know, if I know that you go into Devil's Teeth every morning, and the Devil's Teeth is now sort of wants to try something new, and as a loyal customer, I may want to be a part of it. That could easily be pushed back out to me, the customer, via my phone as I'm walking in. So,
Hillary of medium hipness there in San Francisco. What do you think down the road here? I mean, you know, in food shops, for example, there's always this issue. You know, you're handling grubby cash, and then you're handling food, and sometimes you got to take on and off gloves and all that jazz. I mean, this would be sanitary, Hillary. I mean, if you're not touching anything, you're just waving phones around.
It would be, and it is a great idea. And when people do it, it is very easy.
Hey,
it's just right now. It is oddly getting people to download this app seems to be the barrier. We have to convince them of it.
Well, watch out.
They do, everybody's happy with it.
Watch out. Everybody says the tsunami is building here, and it's coming right at you. Hillary Chernis with Devil's Teeth Baking in San Francisco. Hillary, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's get a caller or two here. Anthony in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. Anthony, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I had a question. In Asia, particularly Japan and Korea, you know, using your phone or a chip in your phone to pay for things has been kind of a thing for a while now.
Yeah.
I was wondering if the American companies that are getting into this now have maybe looked at what they did in terms of addressing, you know, user adoption, which might be different but also like the security concerns and stuff like that.
Right.
Great question. Adoption and security and those further down this trend line. What do you say, Michael?
Well, I think one of the things that you see in Japan and Korea, too, is that it began as sort of a utility. And so I would use my phone to pay for my subway fare, things like that. Or, you know, it contained my monthly pass. And so I used it all the time. And I think the adoption, again, it's not buying a cup of coffee. It's this is what I have to do every day. So therefore, I use it and I get comfortable with it. And now, well, gosh, why don't I use it for all sorts of other things? And so in some ways, I think, yes, it's smart that they push it out to merchants. But you would find adoption much faster if I lived in New York and I could pay for the subway with my phone, or if I, you know, could do all sorts of more utility-based things, you would see adoption, I think, much faster, especially if there was some sort of perk involved for me doing it.
A lot of giants moving onto this field, and it may make a lot of perks and a lot more ubiquity soon. Let me get one more caller here first, if I may. Anthony, thanks for yours. Jennifer in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you think?
I don't like it.
Why?
I don't like, because I think that we've got probes in us already, and I don't want another one. I don't want my phone telling me where to go eat or knowing where I am all the time or telling me that I haven't bought socks in 6 months and they're on sale at Belk. I don't like it.
Right. Cash doesn't trail you, but this does. This would live around you. Jennifer, we got
right,
that.
But cash in itself is a lesson that you save a little bit and then you have a little stash and you go buy something.
Right.
If you don't see it, you don't touch it.
You're worried, Jennifer, this would be tempting to overspend what you've really got available.
Yes, and it's not as much fun just waving your phone and not having some green in your wallet.
Right. We want a wad of cash, Michael. Jennifer, thanks for that. What do you say, Michael? She just doesn't want to be tracked, and she wants that roll of cash.
She raises a very good point. It's far less impressive to pull out a wad of bills than it is to pull out your phone, you know. Or it's more impressive to pull out a wad of bills than it is
Al Capone
to pull out
thought
your phone. So there's that kind of visceral, you know, aesthetic that will be missing. But I think the kind of frictionless payment part of it is a little bit frightening. I mean, it's sort of, you know, Amazon has done a great job of this, right? You know, one click buying and all of a sudden you bought something without really thinking about it too hard.
Yeah.
The sort of act of pulling out your wallet and opening it out and then like, you know, seeing it getting thinner makes you think about it a little bit more, I think, than maybe pulling out your phone does.
We humans may still be simple people around that. If I can just wave my phone and drive off in the Maserati, well, why not drive off in the Maserati? Michael, stand by there in San Francisco at Wired. It's great to have you with us. With us right now from New York, Purchased New York, is Ed McLaughlin. He's Chief Emerging Payments Officer at MasterCard. Ed, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom.
You guys have got a lot of attention from moving into this arena. Why are you so focused at MasterCard on mobile payment?
A lot of reasons, and this is something we've been working on for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. I think as you're moving beyond the cash that we just talked about, we're also moving beyond plastic, and the mobile phone is the most important thing in a lot of our consumers' lives. And what we think is great about it is not only can you always be online, that being online can always be with you. So for MasterCard, it's a way for us to make shopping easier, to get more information out to consumers about what they're doing, and making it just simpler and more convenient.
What's in it for you as a business?
Everything we do is to make things easier for our consumers and better for our merchants. So you'll be able to shop easily from your phone. You'll be able to shop easily with your phone. A lot of merchants, I know you're just talking with Hillary, will be able to accept electronic transactions in ways they couldn't before, and that benefits everyone.
Do you anticipate tying this mainly to credit cards or mainly to checking or savings accounts, like a debit card or what?
That's the whole point, is having complete consumer flexibility. In fact, I'll give you a great story. This just happened to me. I was in New York, and I was in a cab, and I was shopping online using my credit card. I tapped my phone just to get out of the cab. It was a great experience. I just tapped and got out using my debit card. And then when I went to the restaurant, I actually used my plastic card. But all the security features, all the alerts, I could go online and see all my transactions. It was all brought together. So what we really see for consumers is using your mobile for payments is just another way. And people will choose where it makes the most sense for them.
Let's get a caller right here. Michael in Westboro, Massachusetts. You're on with Ed McLaughlin from MasterCard. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you think?
I don't like it either. My concern is about the bank transaction fees. And if we were to move forward to replace cash, I see a potential for the banks to keep raising these fees, and you're essentially at the mercy of the banks after a while. You couldn't make any purchases without adopting their fee. Right now, doesn't cost you anything for cash, to use cash.
Yeah, okay, we'll pick it up. Ed, from a consumer angle, yes, there's a lot of simplicity and convenience, but cash has no fee attached. This will have some. What kind of fee do you anticipate, and what about that consumer saying, no thanks, I don't want to pay to pay?
Well, there's actually a lot of cost to cash if you think about it. People pay check cashing fees. You go to the ATM, you have to do it. It's expensive for merchants to maintain. So I think there's a lot of expense around cash that people are just used to. And electronic can be a lot more efficient. And this always gets back to where I was started. It's consumer choice. The ability to use your card, the ability to tap and go for payments, there's a lot of benefits there, and people will choose what makes the most sense for them.
What kind of transaction fees is the industry? I'm sure they're thinking a lot about it. What range of fees do you imagine might be applied for this kind of retail use?
What we're seeing with mobile is it's just another way of having the same transaction. So whether you use a card, whether you go online, or whether you use your mobile phone, to MasterCard, this is just another way of having a genuine MasterCard transaction.
But I'm asking about the fee. Do you think it'll be 1%, 2%, 3%, 5%, 10%? What are you guessing?
We're not distinguishing mobile payments from using your plastic card.
And what the range there is, what, 3%, 4%, 5% for those transactions that credit card companies charge?
Well, that really depends on the merchant working with whoever their service provider or acquirer is. So in Hillary's example with Square, I think they're charging about 2.75 to her for that.
2.75 as a fee?
Yeah.
Your guess. Okay. It's just one example. Does that seem where MasterCard might end up? Are you guys factoring it higher or lower than that?
Well, the fee a merchant pays is overall for everything from having a terminal or using a service like Square. So we're a smaller component of that overall fee that's out there. Mm-hmm. So we set a range of fees based on whether it's debit, which in the U.S. is an extraordinarily low-cost transaction, mm-hmm. all the way up to extending credit at the point of sale, which is a great benefit for merchants.
Mm-hmm. And that's quite a range. And do you feel confident? Can you stay with us through the break, Ed? I got a couple more questions for you.
Certainly.
Do you feel confident before we go to the break that this is coming? This is going to happen big time?
Well, it's all based on consumer behavior. So I'd ask anyone who has a smartphone I just saw from Ericsson, I think 40% of the people, their phone's the first thing they touch in the morning, and they go online to check out an app.
Yeah.
So what it makes sure is, for the thing you're using the most, that payments and benefits and other rewards are most relevant for you.
Michael in Des Moines, Iowa. Thanks for calling, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm military. I travel a lot, and I use my Android for just about everything.
Okay.
Especially, plane tickets, coffee, when I go to eat. And I've noticed that a lot of the times, especially, at a service industry, if I use my phone, I don't have an opportunity to tip the waitress or the barista.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of wondering how this cashless world is going to affect, the service industry.
Hey,
I'll take my comments off the air.
Hey, Michael, let me ask you before you go. You're paying for coffee with your smartphone. Did you say air tickets, too, with your smartphone?
Southwest, you can pretty much do everything online, and then you kind of wave it as you go through online.
Right.
And,
so
you can check in.
So you're well up on this highway. Ed, what about it? Here's Michael. He's doing it. He's down the path, but he wants to know how to tip, and he's not maybe got bills or coins in his pocket anymore.
Yeah, there's a couple things we're doing on that, one of which is just the ability to top up your transaction. So you have the great thing, unlike a plastic card, is you have a full interface on the mobile phone. So if you're initiating the payment, you can top it up if you want to put a tip on there and the merchant accepts it that way. Or in a lot of card transactions, you'd have the ability to add a tip after the transaction if you wanted to.
Michael, have you heard the chatter on the tip front? The world of waiters and waitresses think this is going to be better or worse.
Yeah, I know that the world of waiters and waitresses love cash. But I will say that, for example, I know that with Square, you can sort of add your tip profile to your profile. So if I'm a big tipper, I might put it at a certain percentage, and it just is sort of automatic from there.
I can give another great example. I think there's probably the hardest audience in the world to impress is New York City cabbies. And there was a survey, I think it was last year, the New York Post, where cabs said taking card or taking electronic payments was the best thing that happened to them that year, because people weren't rounding down to the dollar or fumbling. So they incorporated Hey Tap and added tip to that interface in the New York City cabs, and it was a great thing for the cab drivers.
Huh. Well, maybe it works both ways. It's what people get used to. Let's get a call from Minneapolis and Justin. Hi, Justin. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, what are we going to do whenever our main form of payment is our phone, and that phone ends up getting destroyed? For example, my father-in-law has gone through 7 phones in 2 years.
Wow.
So that's going to be his main form of payment.
Yeah.
Then suddenly his phone is, dropped in a lake or he's on a construction site.
Well, let me ask you, we'll pick that up, but what about, right now you can lose your wallet, you can lose everything in it. Is that so different, Justin, in your mind?
Well, that's a good point, too, but, I've got cash at home that I know I have access to.
Yeah.
Or, I'm not pulling my wallet out as often as I'm pulling my phone. Whenever I'm going to go swimming or something, I don't have my phone near me, or
right.
I don't have my wallet near me, whereas I might have my phone near me in case there's an emergency.
Ed, we can hear an awful lot of call centers with MasterCard in the future hearing this, I have lost my phone. What's that going to mean, Ed? What about that problem?
Well, that's actually something we could do much better with a phone than we can with your physical wallet. Because the moment you tell us that you've lost your phone, for example, we could block any transactions coming from it. When you get your new phone, we could resynchronize it with the credentials or the information you would already put on it. So it's actually a lot easier in the digital world to be able to block things to enable a new device that you may have. If you have a music service where you can store all your music remotely and then also have it on your local device, your digital wallet or your mobile wallet will work a lot like that.
And what if somebody else has swiped my smartphone? Can they go on a spending spree with it?
No, we have the same password protections that you would expect. So if you have a PIN to access the wallet you'd have on there, there's also in the network all sorts of fraud controls. So we can tell the patterns that are going on and monitor it that way also.
Michael Copeland, I was reading about somebody who's building a retina scanner into their smartphone. So if it's not your eyeballs, it's not paying out.
Yeah, Google's latest version of their Android operating system has facial recognition and
So you have to flash your own face in the phone to show that it's you when you're buying?
Yeah. Well, or just to unlock your phone, period.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these things work. I suppose they'll get better and better. But the fifth time you put your phone in front of your retina just so you can pay something is this probably the last time you're going to do it.
Right up with that.
What I was going to say about losing your wallet.
Yeah.
The one thing about your wallet and cash is that you don't have to make sure that you've plugged it in the night before. And now, sometimes a dead phone, And so that's another consideration with why having a $5 bill in your back pocket is not such a bad thing sometimes, too.
Hey, Brian in Bath, Michigan. Brian, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you think?
My concern is that this is all wonderful. It sounds like it's, a lot of great convenience and stuff. But I look at it as a more paranoid, pessimistic view that if we were to go to a cashless society, you wouldn't be able to stash that money in your mattress. You wouldn't be able to keep a little get-out-of-the-country kind of stash if you needed to leave. The government would be able to have control of your assets, and if you were to become troublesome, they could freeze those assets, and you would be left with no way to travel about the country. And that kind of scares me a little bit.
Easy to freeze, easy to track. I mean, Ed, people are rightly concerned about all that. You you live the cash life, and there's people who definitely are going to prefer cash. I saw one people writing here a list that included drug dealers, prostitutes, politicians, dog walkers, nannies, but just regular citizens may like the idea of a little cash that nobody can track, you can always have, nobody can freeze. What about those concerns, Ed?
That's up to the consumer. If you want to have some cash with you for whatever nefarious or other purposes, that certainly makes sense. What we're focusing on is the ability for electronic payments to give you better information, more convenience, more safety around your money. If your cash is stashed in your mattress, there's not a whole lot we can do if someone breaks in. So, you know, for all of the areas and all the places where electronic transactions are clearly superior, we'll make it as easy as possible for people to take advantage of it. And one other point on the management, too. You know, you're right, cash can't communicate. So we have a lot of things. We have a system we call In Control where I can say, hey, if an international transaction happens or if I spend over a certain limit or if any other setting I have, I exceed my budget for a given month, just send me a message on my phone. So I recently bought a pair of eyeglasses, and literally as I was walking out of the shop, I got a message to the phone said, hey, this is kind of an expensive transaction. You know, it's over a threshold you've personally set. And that was a great experience.
So it's talking to you and sort of checking in to make sure everything's cool. That sounds comforting. On the other hand, Michael, we've got a lot of people writing about this privacy concern. Here's Deirdre writes to us on Facebook, and she says, heck, wow, Minority Report. Big Brother is watching and tracking you, ignorantly blissful, willful abdication of some of our last remnants of privacy. No, thank you, she writes. I do not have a smartphone. I have a stupid phone, and I like it that way. What about on this privacy front, Michael? I mean, the bank, the merchants, anybody who can tap in, we'll be able to see your entire spending profile. Now, they can see a lot already, but what about that concern, Michael?
Yeah, this is a debate that we're having as we put more and more of our lives, you know, basically online, and it's part of that whole context. And it is a question. I mean, it might be a little bit creepy as you're walking down the street, you get an offer for, you know, lunch, 20% off, or you might like it. And I think part of it is what we're comfortable with. And there will be a part of the population that just is not comfortable with this and doesn't want any part of it. And there will be a part of the population that is all over it. And I guess the question is, and folks like MasterCard and others are betting that, you know, more of us will like this than not.
Part of the bet also is all of this can and should be opt-in on the consumer standpoint. So we are absolute advocates of full transparency on this, that people can take advantage of the services as they make sense for them. So our job is the electronic transaction to facilitate the payment, and other options or offers that people want to take advantage of, it should be up to them.
Presumably, there'll be lots of incentives. I mean, already everybody wants to give you a loyalty card. With this, you won't even really need a loyalty card because they'll know every time who you are, when you pay. Ed, I can imagine lots of offers, coupon style of the future coming down the line here.
And people really like that. You know, who wouldn't want the 10th cup of coffee free? And if this makes it easier to get and you know exactly what's going on, why not take advantage of that?
Boy, they'll be in our wallets. They'll be our wallets. They'll be in our heads. But there's a lot of convenience there, too. Going to be interesting to see. Andrew in Buffalo, New York. Andrew, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I had a question about, is there technology out there to help folks like Boy Scouts or veteran groups or the local football team that sell fundraisers outside of retails? You know, people are walking around with less cash in their pockets. I've been told many times also I don't carry cash anymore.
Yeah, or the Salvation Army bell ringers at Christmas time, or you name it. Ed, what about that? Or for that matter, panhandlers. But Girl Scouts, too, and Boy Scouts and the high school football team, how are they going to rustle up? You know, how do you pass the hat when there's no cash in the pocket?
Well, my daughter is a Girl Scout, and they're now working with Intuit to accept payments with their Go payment. So they're taking cards for selling cookies. So I think that's part of this mobile revolution is anyone with a smartphone can begin accepting electronic payments. And so it allows a lot of the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, charitable organizations, and others, craft fairs, all sorts of environments where you couldn't get electronic payments. You now can because of the connectivity.
Susie in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, Michael, let me just get Susie here, if I may, for a moment. Susie, Pittsburgh, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm not pro or con necessarily, but one thing that my husband and I have already struggled with a little bit with our son is online purchasing is abstract, and I think this almost takes purchasing to an even more abstract level. And when you're trying to sort of help kids understand money, I think those of us who grew up in the analog age remember, you know, emptying our piggy bank and taking it to the store and buying a Barbie doll or whatever. And it was very tangible, and it kind of gave you a real feel for how much value certain amounts of money had.
Yes.
And I think with this, I think some of us struggle with how do we help our kids understand when you're not really holding anything in your hand. And I think his generation will come up with a way to do that.
Right. Yeah, somehow. But that's a great question, Susie. I love it. Michael, I mean, it's almost the semiotics here of money. For kids especially, you hold it in your hand. You hold a bunch of coins. You see they add up. You can go buy something with them. We're really getting high concept here when it's just a wave of a gizmo, Michael.
Yeah, I think the caller's probably right, though, that somehow we'll have that same effect, you know, whether it's some kind of meter on your phone that shows how much you've spent today or, mm-hmm. you know, how much you
ding,
have
ding,
left
ding.
In your digital piggy bank, you know, as you put it in, maybe. I mean, so it grows and you get to see it grow and something happens. And then as you deplete it, it something else happens.
Lots of graphic ways to do that.
Yeah, I think we'll probably have that feedback loop in a different way, because it is a necessary part of understanding the value of things and yeah. you know, what your actions mean.
Yeah, Susie, thanks. Gary in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Love the idea of the technology. I think it should actually go further. Why am I pulling out my smartphone from my pocket and actually performing a process very much like a plastic swipe? That phone should stay in my pocket. There should be some sort of Bluetooth communication between me and the merchant where the security is simply maybe my face pops up as a JPEG image on the merchant's
yeah.
console, and then they can just... What's the point if I'm just doing the same thing as I'm doing with plastic?
Well, we're right on that curve already, I think, Gary. But, Ed, how about it? I mean, with the near-field communication, are you really going to have to pull anything out here or just... walk by.
Well, that is removing from the physical to the digital. All those type of interfaces, the facial recognition we talked about, all of those become possible. So we're absolutely not trying to recreate the swipe your plastic metaphor. You just happen to be using our phone. The point is to take advantage of all the things, the connectivity and the capability the phone give you.
So down the road, you see that happen. I mean, what do you think about adoption here, Ed? You're MasterCard. You're in the banking business. Do you agree with the technologists who say by 2020, which is just, seven, 8 years away now, these digital transactions will outweigh cash transactions in this country? Do you buy that kind of timeline?
Well, it'll happen along the line that makes sense for consumers. And I think a lot of it came from the callers that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that tap-and-go experience to get out of a cab, that's a great experience. And I think people will adopt to it. We talked earlier about being able just to tap to get onto transit and things like that. So I think what you'll see is people will use all different types of payment mechanisms where it makes the most sense for them, where it's most convenient. And that's what's going to drive this transformation.
Can you see, Michael Copeland, down the road a time when, you know, I pull out a wad of cash and the checkout line kind of looks at it like, ooh, gross. We don't handle that stuff? What is that?
Yeah, we don't accept cash. I find that hard to believe in the near term, I'll be honest, or sort of in the horizon I can imagine, just because it's the problem here is a standards one, right? And there's all sort of competing standards. Mm-hmm. Cash is a standard that, you know, is accepted and is a standard that works. And until something else becomes the standard, I think we'll have a hard time beating out cash. It won't disappear completely.
And your gang at Wired, are they all running around with their smartphones out paying right and left now? Are they not cash Neanderthals anymore?
I think some of us are. I think it's funny because, you know, you go to there's the whole food truck craze. Food trucks like cash, too. So, you know, you need to have your cash if you want to go to your favorite food truck right now. And so I think it's probably we try and do both. That's for sure. And I know I do. And it's an interesting world out there right now.
We could do an hour or many hours on the cash economy as it stands right now, and that would be another big turn of the screw. If it's all digital, what happens there? Maybe they'll become a kind of under-the-table version even of digital. It's a fascinating conversation, fascinating prospect. Ed McLaughlin, Chief Emerging Payments Officer with MasterCard, thank you for your time and insights today, Ed. Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care.
Michael Copeland, Senior Editor at Wired Magazine, joining us today from San Francisco. Michael, thank you so much. Terrific. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Great for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.